Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It really is one of the most understated county executive races I can remember. I was talking to some friends yesterday, both parties, and they all kind of commented about there's really no buzz out there. There's no hot issue burning. There's no controversy. There's no fighting really going on between the candidates. It really makes it the exception rather than the rule. The very first campaign I ever worked on as a young college student was a county executive race, and I can remember some pretty hot ones. And this one, as I say, is right now kind of an outlier.
Are you hearing anything about internal polling on either side? I think real telling. We haven't heard too much about any kind of polling.
I haven't either. I'm hearing people speculating about, you know, where they might be and how close it might be or not close. But it's all speculation. There's no leaking from either side about internal polling, and none of the big organizations have begun their polling. I would suspect that within the next week or so, we may very well see a front page story in the Buffalo News about a poll that the news does, and that may give us our first real indication of where this race stands. But as of this point today, the 11th of October, no data of any reliable sources at all.
So way back in, I guess it was June, I was talking with someone, pretty high in the GOP world locally, and they had indicated to me that you just wait, this is going to be a tighter race than you expect, and that last month is going to be like shock and awe as far as spending and advertising on the Republican side, or independent side, however you want to characterize Lynn Dixon's candidacy. I'm not seeing that. Are you?
No, not yet. None of us are. But, given the relative size of their war chest, if she is going to do what you call a shock and awe campaign, it's probably going to be in the last 10 days, given the amount of money she has. I don't think she has enough to sustain that kind of intensive media campaign from the 11th of October to Election Day. So I would think that if they're going to do that kind of offensive, you'll see it in the last 10 days.
You've been involved in politics a long time. I'm just a casual observer. If I was involved here at all, on either side, I guess my strategy for Mark Poloncarz would be don't mess up, don't make any mistakes, just do your job. And for Lynn Dixon, it would be swing and swing hard. I think Mark Poloncarz is doing what I just said. I don't feel like Lynn Dixon is swinging or swinging hard.
Well, I would agree with your strategy for both candidates. I would add one other thing though to Mark Poloncarz's strategy. Besides, do no harm, don't give any openings to the opposition to exploit. The other thing I would add is just the ground game, the get out the vote game. As I mentioned on the show yesterday, there's only one race in the entire city of Buffalo where there's even a Republican on the ballot. It is a councilmanic race. That's it. All of the other councilmanic races were decided primary day. So there's really no grassroots effort, no grassroots enthusiasm for people to go out and vote. There's just nothing on the ballot within the city of Buffalo. So if I'm the Poloncarz people, that has got to be a potential concern. Because of the massive number of Democrats in the city of Buffalo, any Democrat running for county office needs to come out of Buffalo with as big a margin as possible just to be an insurance policy should anything go wrong in the suburbs. That's got to be part of the strategy. Forget what you mail out. Forget your radio commercials. Forget your TV commercials. How are we going to get people in the city of Buffalo out to vote? Now, Democrats in the last few years have gotten an insurance policy. It used to be that Republicans could count on suburban vote to counter the city. But in the last few years, the three first-ring suburbs, Cheektowaga, Amherst, and Tonawanda, have all become Democrat towns in enrollment and by elected officials. There is not one Republican on the Amherst, Tonawanda, or Cheektowaga town boards. So the calculus has changed for the Democrats in their favor. they not only have the city of Buffalo that is a potential gold mine of voters, but now they have the first three first-ring suburbs. You take the total population of the city in those three suburbs, and you've got two-thirds of the population of Erie County in four municipalities. So they've got a lot of structural advantages, but they got to get the vote out.
So on election night, you probably want to look at that vote real closely, right? Those first-ring suburbs would be very telling.
Oh, absolutely. And plus, historically, there have been three suburbs that Republicans have been able to do very well in. They used to call it the Golden Triangle. It was Lancaster and West Seneca and Cheektowaga. Those three could be relied upon to split their ticket and vote for Republicans. And all three have a long history of voting for numerous Republicans at the county, state, and national levels. So that's probably in the playbook of the Republican Party and Lynn Dixon's campaign is, can we get that back? Can we use that to offset some of the other communities, and especially the city of Buffalo, if there's a low turnout in the city? Can we get out the vote in those three communities to make it an interesting race?
Interesting indeed. Let's shift the conversation now over to debates. As an observer, again, as a casual observer of politics and one who has to follow it, debates, I'm getting sour on debates, and I'm talking nationally, locally, just debates in general. I think they'll always have a place, and they're important, and I would certainly welcome them, on our air in the future. However, as I watch these national debates, with 10, 15 candidates, or locally, like we had the other night on Channel 4, I don't see a lot getting done. It's almost gimmicky, and I don't know. What are your thoughts on debates at this stage of where we're at in how politicians react to them?
Well, first of all, I'm not a big fan of them either, because they're really not debates. The format is more like a glorified press conference, and I don't think they serve much purpose. I mean, with 10 or 15 candidates, it's a mess, okay?
Right.
But with two, I've always been an advocate of the Canadian model, or the British model, of a debate between two or three candidates. And that is, you put them at a podium, and you have a moderator who says to the two or three candidates, for the next 15 minutes, you're going to debate British defense policy. Go. And the three of them have, a free-for-all. Now, they know how to do that probably better than we do, because their parliamentary system requires skilled debaters like that. But I would love to see one of the TV stations or radio station break the mold one of these years and do that format, as opposed to the very structured, you've got a minute to answer and you've got 30 seconds to rebut, and it's very robotic and it's very scripted. And as you're right, it doesn't lead to anything. So it'd be very interesting if somebody broke the mold and copied the British and Canadian model and set one up for a local race and see what happens. It could be very, very interesting. Just you give them a topic, you give them a time limit, and the two of them debate. I that's what I'd like to see. And I think that might produce more information for voters than what we have now.
Yeah, I'm all for breaking the mold. And my only fear in that is, if proposed, I don't know which candidate or candidates in any race that would agree to do it, And I think, that's the problem inherently.
It might very well be, but I don't think it's ever been offered, so we don't know the answer to that.
Interesting. Quite. And there is another, we had the WIVB debate the other night. It is what it is, or was what it was, and there is another debate coming up on Channel 2, WNED and WBFO. That is later in the week. Now, before that, we did, I won't say break the mold, but I think we're just trying to do something different. We did this with the NY27 candidates several weeks ago, where we invited everyone in studio. They get one full hour. We limit the commercials. We limit the news. We just kind of like peel away the onion and give that candidate one full hour of airtime with our anchors. It's just questions. It's I'd say one-on-one, but it's two-on-one. Susan and Brian, talking on Monday with Mark Poloncarz, and Tuesday with Lynn Dixon. Again, maybe not breaking the mold, but just different. And I think, you know, we saw it just this week on CNN. They're doing, you know, a candidate every half hour, I think, or every hour. It does give you a different perspective. They're not interrupted. Yes, they preach their own case. But, you know, your thoughts on that, that format versus, you know, two people, you know, that get 30 seconds here and 30 seconds there.
Well, it's not a debate. It's an extended interview. But the advantage is that you can not just ask one follow-up question, but your interviewers can ask two or three and stay on a topic as long as they want to stay on that topic. And they can press a candidate beyond just the talking point, which you often get in a debate with, you know, a minute and 30 sec or a minute answer and a 30-second response. You get the talking points. In studio for an hour with, you know, two interviewers really works against that type of format that gives a candidate the out of just staying with the talking points, because your people can stay on a point for as long as they want, and they can ask as many questions until they get an answer or until they realize that the candidate's not going to answer it. And that sends a message to the voters, too, that after persistent probing and questioning, if they just stick to the talking points, that's probably going to work against them in the minds of the average voter.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. I think it'll be an interesting session, and then I think we'll talk with you on Wednesday about what you had thought about the two candidates. You know, and again, going back to, you know, this whole race in general, you know, I'm surrounded by the race all the time in the media. You're surrounded by the race as a political consultant, commentator. But the average Joe out there, you know, they're not talking about this, right? I mean, this is really,
No. Yeah,
this is inside stuff.
Very low-key race at this point. Now, I've been around politics long enough to know that can change on a dime. There could be an issue that arises. There could be a mistake made by one of the candidates. Any number of things could happen to elevate this race from just a low-volume buzz to the topic on everybody's mind and conversation. So that's what makes politics, to me anyway, so interesting, is how quickly it can change. And just when you think everything is settled and you're headed down a path, boom, it changes, and you're on a totally different path with a totally different dynamic.
Yeah, a final thought, Carl, would be simply asking, you know, what would be either the best or the worst thing to happen to one of these candidates? And, you know, maybe not both for both, but, you know, what could happen that could change this race, I guess?
Well, as you mentioned earlier, the incumbent can always make a mistake, and that leads to an opening. And that's why incumbents don't like debates, because it always gives the opponent, first of all, it gives them free airtime that they might not otherwise be able to afford. And secondly, it gives the chance for the incumbent to make a mistake, to do a self-inflicted wound. We were talking yesterday with Brian and Susan, and we were talking about knockout punches in debates. And I said, you know, it really is the exception to the rule for knockout punches. But if I think back to those so-called knockout punches, oftentimes they're self-inflicted. For example, in 1976, when President Ford was debating Jimmy Carter, Ford made the statement that the Soviet Union doesn't dominate Eastern Europe, and then he wouldn't clarify it, and that changed the whole debate for the next 10 days. People were saying, what, is he crazy? How could he not say the Soviet Union dominates Eastern Europe? Self-inflicted wound. The Rick Lazio moment, when Rick Lazio left his podium and went over to Hillary Clinton's podium and invaded her space and hovered over her and wouldn't leave, that was a self-inflicted wound. So that's what the worry with incumbents is that these things can lead to that type of mistake that changes the whole chemistry of the campaign going forward. So that could always happen, and every time an incumbent steps into a debate or any type of forum like that, there's a risk of that. And that's why they like to limit the number of debates, and that's why they like to get them done early. So if there is a mistake, they've got time to correct it.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.